The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place.
So what do I do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
This is wonderful advice. This is what I needed to hear.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
Can everybody make a mistake?
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are the best thing that has ever happened to people.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You had to have an outcome measure. That's what they always told us. Grad school, you're designing a test, you're designing some kind of research. You have to have an outcome measure. You can't just hypothesize that something is going to happen without saying, here's how I measure that it happened. So I've been claiming for the many years that this program has been on that it will raise your IQ. I haven't gone around and done a before and after IQ test of my 194 listeners. I can't do that. That's too many people. They're too scattered. Even though there's not very many of them, they're scattered. There is an informal one that we are working on. If you watch Jeopardy, and you've listened to this program for 2 years minimum, you can go beyond categories Hair Care Harmony and Potent Potables. You can do that. You can even answer a few questions in Rivers in Siberia or Elizabethan Literature. You can go beyond the $100 question. We can't prove it, but we're trying to gather the data. Listeners to this program, going beyond the first $100 in categories like political upheaval in Renaissance France. Stuff like that. I always want to say when I watch those shows, how do you know that? How are you aware of that? I mean, I can see knowing the words to songs from the 60s. I know that. 10 different kinds of soft drinks, I know that. But man, the political upheaval in pre-Christian Mexico? Man, that's a tough one. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. If this is part of your two-year journey toward a higher IQ, I welcome you. If it's not, if you just kind of tune in when you can here and there, you'll probably get a little bit of a bump, but it won't be noticeable. Won't be noticeable until at least we've estimated minimum 12 to 15 listening intervals, and we're not really sure what the optimum interval is. It's close to 4 minutes. 4 minutes. The number to get on to the program is 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL, if you'd like to get on to the program. For me to get on to the program, I had to grovel and beg and do it for free. You just call the number. You get on for several reasons. One, if you have a question about something in your life that you want to get another voice involved with it, I'm not going to diagnose you, and I'm not going to do therapy here. I'm not going to step on any turf of a therapist you're seeing, but maybe we can just put our heads together, and between the two of us, we can raise our IQ and go to the $300 mark on Jeopardy on topics like waterways around the world. You can also call in to help somebody else. People do that. And if they have a generic question, a lot of times a question about faith as it intersects with psychology, that's a fascinating subject for me. A couple of my most recent books have been in that area as to where our faith and our Lord's words intersect with psychology. Speaking of books, I just want to offer this thought to re-release of a previous book. It is titled now, Living Calm, Mastering Anger and Frustration. That's available. It's available through the EWTN RC catalog. It's available on my website. And then you can hear the advertisement, available where all books are sold. Well, I don't know about that. But it is a million seller. Yeah, that's right. It's a million seller. There's a million in my cellar. All right, number to get onto the program, 877-573-7825. My editor, one of my editors, Taylor Wilson, over at EWTN, lovely young lady, she put the summary of the Living Calm book onto a particular Facebook page that they have. It was, I don't think it was on the major EWTN website or Facebook page or social media or all the various channels that EWTN has. But I think they hid me in a corner somewhere where we have 17 viewers. Okay, maybe a little more than that. And she asked for some questions from folks. Here was one of the questions. Should I avoid people who are a near occasion of sin for me? Let's digest that for a moment. If that were the case, you'd have to avoid a lot of people. Not because they're near occasions of sin, necessarily, but because around them you're not at your best, you could be at your worst. For example, are you going to avoid your children? I mean, for most of us, that's one of the main reasons you go to confession when you got little kids. I can't believe the things I said to my kid. You're going to avoid your spouse? Going to avoid your mother? You're supposed to honor your mother, you know. So that's the first question. How are you going to avoid people that are in the intimate center of your life? Secondly, what is a near occasion of sin? Can people be a near occasion of sin? I suppose they could if they actively try to tempt you to sin, to do something that would be morally wrong. But when someone asks that question, should I avoid those who are a near occasion of sin for me? What they're saying is, I act a certain way, say things, lose my cool, irritable, intolerant, whatever it is. I act a certain way around certain people, and I don't like the way I act. Could be considered wrong in some respects. Here's the problem with that. It is not A equals B. It is not A leads to B automatically. Meaning this, whatever someone does that results in you acting badly is not an automatic reflex. You don't have to act that way. If someone says something and you want to fire back, nobody is making you fire back. You're firing back because you gave in to the urge to fire back. Well, Dr. Ray, isn't that a near occasion of sin? They put me in that situation and the urge got strong. But you control the urge. Oh, come on, Dr. Ray, sometimes you can't control the urge. Oh, really? Use what I call the million-dollar test. If at any point you are on the edge of losing your temper or saying something that you would regret, and I said to you, I'll give you $1 million if you don't do that, would you not do it? I mean, your emotions are going to overwhelm you. That's it. There's no way to stop. You're out of control. Here it's coming. Nothing you can do about it. It's just a reflex emotion. And I said, here's $1 million if you don't. I guarantee you, you'd stop dead in your tracks. What if I said $10,000? Most people would stop at $10,000. How about $1,000? You'd probably still stop. How about $5? Nah, you might decide it's just worth it saying it for $5. You'll lose the money. It's not. Besides, it's taxable. So what you're saying is, given the motive, I would control myself. Given the reason, being strong enough to control myself. So apparently the reason to shoot off your mouth or to say things you shouldn't say or to fire back or to get agitated or whatever it is that you call giving in to the near occasions of sin, which is that person as you've labeled that person. Whatever it is, you just don't think it's enough to control yourself. For the most part, people can't be near occasions of sin if you allow yourself to react a certain way to them. They can be a near occasion of sin if they're trying to pull you into moral wrongdoing along with them. Come on, let's go to a certain place where they have all kinds of adult entertainment. Come on, I'll drive you there. Now that could be a near occasion of sin. But much of the time we call people a near occasion of sin, it's because we don't react well around them. We allow ourselves to give in to our impulses. I guess what I'm saying is, people can't really be a near occasion of sin interpersonally unless you let them. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
EWTN home video highlight for May is The Heresies, Volume 1. The Catholic Church has fought against many heresies from the beginning, and these errors still infiltrate our culture today. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
When you see the world with Catholic eyes, you see God's hand at work in human history. You see the true, the good, and the beautiful. With a Master's of Arts in Catholic Studies from Franciscan University of Steubenville, you see the world as it truly is. This online program helps you see art, literature, theology, psychology, and more as occasions for grace. Find out more about the Master's in Catholic Studies at franciscan.edu/MCS. That's franciscan.edu/MCS.
No new age stuff here. I was even going to say mostly middle age. You have to live well past 100 to be middle age right now. People say, I'm on the back nine. No, you're not. You're on hole number 15. Kind of where I'm getting there. All right. Stephanie, Guadalupe Radio, Houston, Texas, has a 13-year-old. 13-year-old daughter. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Has your daughter given you any indication that she understands what abortion is?
No, it's my granddaughter, and I was just thinking that you know, because it's being talked about so much and she goes to public school, that it might be, you know, smart to discuss it and maybe, you know, whether she's too young. She's actually going to be 14 in September. But if whether she's too young for that kind of discussion, or if you have a book you would recommend on it. It's a touchy subject, but, you know, I'd rather her hear the right things than the wrong things.
There is a wonderful book just released by a woman named Janet Morena. She is an associate of Father Pavone in Priests for Life. And it is geared totally toward talking with adolescents. It's her most recent book. The title right now, because of my age and I'm on the back nine, escapes me. But if you look up Janet and Priest for Life, that book will be listed prominently. Now, the second question I would have about that is, do you suspect that her parents are not bringing this all up with her?
I would guess not. That would be my guess.
So you're basing that on the fact that they just don't seem to be all that involved in the faith or their religion, or if they are, they're just kind of floating along with it.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I think it's kind of like, you know, when your child gets to be a certain age, you're not, you know, doing preemptively things that maybe you should do, especially when it's the first child, you know.
At this point, if she's a 13-year-old in our culture, even a 13-year-old in our culture among families that have some religious sensibility, she probably has a smartphone, correct?
Oh, she does.
Okay. And so that means that she's being educated morally by that smartphone.
Correct.
And the parents will probably be doing what many parents do who talk to me, who say, "What happened? We didn't raise her to think like this. Why does she think like this?" Okay. Well, if you are permitted, you can sit down with your little granddaughter and say, "You know something, I'm curious something, honey. I'm just a little curious here. Do you have any thoughts on abortion?
Okay.
Do you know what it is?" "Yes, I do, Grandma. I think a woman should choose." "Okay, you think that. So tell me, what is she choosing?" And then you can just ask logical questions. You don't have to bring in religion. This is a matter of simply biology. You can say, is it a baby?" "Well, not really." "When does it become a baby?" "Well, we don't really know." So are you saying that if it were a very early baby, that this would be wrong to do? You shouldn't do this? "Well, yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I don't know if I can tell somebody else not to." "Well, if you feel it's a baby, then would that be killing a baby?" I mean, you just logically take her through this rather than grandma telling her how you see this from a religious perspective and from a reasoned perspective. Just raise the questions that I got to believe she has not remotely thought about in any way, and she may surprise you. There's some surveys out there, Stephanie, that say the young people, believe it or not, are moving more toward pro-life than the previous generation. That's kind of a shock. Wonder why that is. Mm-hmm. She may surprise you. But I think you got to find out where she's at, how she looks at this, and then you just very logically take her through whatever she tells you. If she says, "Well, I don't think it's right for me to tell somebody else what they should do with their body." "Oh, okay. So then they shouldn't have to wear a seatbelt then? The government told them to wear a seatbelt. Should they wear a seatbelt? How about if they want to own a slave? If they want to own a slave and the slave wants to be owned, is that okay? Can they do that?" So, you know, you can just basically point out all of the standard illogic in the whole idea of it's my body and I can kill whatever's growing inside my body. You know, you might say something like, "Well, if somebody goes to the doctor and says, 'I want you to cut off my thumb,' do you think there's any doctor that would do that?" "No." "Well, could they then go to the doctor and say, I want you to cut out this part of me that's healthy? Is there any difference there? How's that working? You know, so given all that, Stephanie, I think you can take her through it, but be prepared for a little blowback if her parents, quote unquote, don't want grandma confusing their daughter.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, sweetheart. Thanks for the call. Talk to you. Now, did you hear what I just said? I said, all right, sweetheart, thanks for the call. And yesterday I got an email, and its subject line was Dr. Ray Grundy's use of appellations or something like that. And I figured, oh, okay, I'm going to get it again. It's not what happened. That is not what happened. The lady said, the e-person said, I guess I can say lady because she said she was a lady, that she said our hypersensitivity about everything. And she said, Dr. Ray, you aren't kowtowing a certain cultural rule. And I said, well, I don't mean to in any. I didn't say this to her. Here's what I was thinking. She said, I wrote her back, and I said, well, you're a real sweetheart for saying that. I said, I basically don't want to kowtow to all the linguistic rules that now say you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't talk this way, you can't talk that way, you're not allowed to say this, and that's going to change next week, so just be ready. Oh, my, oh, my. Marty has a wife. She's one of seven. Hi, Marty, how are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for asking. I take it you got my question.
I did.
I'm looking for your insight here.
Here's what I know. Your wife has six other siblings. She yep. believes that she is the only one to properly care for her mother. Is that true, or is she the only one who will do it?
Both.
Oh, so in other words,
and
those
she
six.
Says,
okay.
She says, if they wanted to help, they'd offer to help. And I said, maybe you need to ask them or press them as, you know, a sibling can to another. No, if they don't want. So, you know, that's part of the conversation.
Well, it is. Now, you said something interesting here. What do you do when you offer somebody what you think is a reasonable suggestion? Ask for help. And they say, no, I'm not going to. They should know. Not doing it. Now, is it safe to say, Marty, that this is the only time, you only said this one time to your wife, please ask for help? Or are
no.
you saying, I know where you were going with that. I just wanted to get you to say it, right?
But I don't harangue her, but when opportunities come up, I say, why don't you ask for help?
And what does she say?
If they don't want to help, I can't make them. If
times,
they wanted to help,
times 27.
Yep.
Yes. So my first suggestion is quit saying it. Quit saying it.
Yeah, okay.
That's the same response you're going to get every time. So for you to say it again is kind of like saying, you know what, here's how she's hearing it, if I may so speculate. When you say something like that, she's thinking, will you quit telling me what to do?
Probably.
Okay. So, that's it. Mom is still living at home, but mom is right on the edge, if not past the edge, of being able to live independently, right?
Oh, she cannot. She's got 24-hour care. My wife goes to work and then goes over to her mom's, and they've got care during the day. No, that's another thing. I can't say anything like, you know, she might be better off in a care facility, but that can't be broached by me.
How long has she been caring for her mom?
This way, 3 years.
That's a lot.
And she never asked me. We never had the chance to really discuss this. She just said, this is what I'm going to do. And...
Okay, stay there, Marty. There's more to this. Just don't go away. I got to take a break. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get onto the program. Dr. Ray Grundy, want to hear from you. Maybe somebody could have a suggestion here to help Marty out, too. I'm not always 100% right, usually 96, 97, somewhere in there. except when I disagree with my wife.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Father John Ricardo served as our spiritual director, and he gave us a theme on which to speak. He asked all the speakers to address this statement in some way, shape, or form: because of you, I know God. And that hit me and Deacon Dominic when he first put that out there like a ton of bricks, because basically, that's our story. And I believe if we stop and think about this, because of someone in our life, whether it be maybe a relative or maybe someone at work or maybe someone on the street, who was it that witnessed to you? And because of that person, you either came to know the Lord or know him and your one holy Catholic and apostolic church better and more intimately.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Who belongs to the Catholic Church? According to the Catholic Catechism, all men and women are called to the Catholic unity of the people of God. In different ways, they belong or are ordered to belong. The Catholic faithful, other believers in Christ, and all mankind are called by God's grace to salvation. Those who in faith accept all the precepts, sacraments, and all the means of salvation given to the Church and possess the Spirit of Christ are fully incorporated into the society of the Church. One, however, who does not persevere in charity is not saved. He or she remains in the bosom of the Church, in its body, but not in its heart. The Church is joined in many ways to other faiths that call themselves Christian, even though they do not profess the Catholic faith in its entirety or have not preserved unity or communion under the successors of Peter. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I double dog dare you to call me. I triple dog dare you, but then you'd have to. If you're male, you have to. Women, they look at that like they look at the Three Stooges. I don't care if you triple dog dare, that's ridiculous. But guys, you triple dog dare a guy with no reversees? No takebacks? Oh, he's done. He's done. Talking to Marty from Des Moines, Iowa. His wife, who is one of seven grown children, believes she is the only one who not only can properly care for her mother, but who is willing to. Now, Marty has said, can you ask for help? Now, this has been an ongoing disagreement for 3 years, as she's taken care of her mother for 3 years. Marty says there's 24/7 care because mom simply cannot live on her own independently. It's getting worse. And his wife goes over there after work for several hours at a time. And when Marty says, can you get help? She basically says they'll help if they want to help. Marty, still there?
I'm here listening.
How long have you been married?
Almost 15 years.
Okay. Your wife is how old?
In her 50s.
I think you're dealing with a heavy emotional motivation. This is my mother. I owe it to her. She would be devastated if we took her out of her home. I can't say she'll deteriorate and she'll die, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Okay. So the reason I say this is that given that she is so emotionally driven regarding this, and the heavy dark cloud of if I don't do this, I will basically be consigning my mother to death.
Yep.
If you're dealing with that kind of thinking, no amount of reasoning is going to do a bit of a budge. Not a thing. So
I didn't want to hear that. I know.
I know, my friend, and I didn't want to say it to you. But my guess would be that right now, given the circumstances, she feels that's where her loyalty lies.
Yep.
Now, if we poll 100 people and we say to them, should Marty's wife be a little more concerned about the marriage effect? And 88 of them said, absolutely, she should be. 12 say, no, I agree with the wife. That does you no good. And the reason it does you no good is because you have a wife who says, this is where my loyalty right now should lie. So my suggestion is this, Marty. First of all, there's a couple of things. Your wife is not going to be able to keep this up, not because she's not willing to, but because the deterioration is going to be in a downward trajectory, and at some point, even with 24/7, your mother-in-law is not going to be able to stay there. Okay.
Right.
That's the first thing. Second thing, if you resist it at this point and you keep making this an issue, I know you've been saying right for me, and I hesitate to blow my perfect record here.
Yeah.
But she could get resentful because you're trying to stand in the way of her and her mother.
I don't disagree, okay. But she won't see the other side of the coin either.
Right, I know that. I got that.
Mother is okay.
I got that. And I can't speculate.
You're right.
I can't. Thank you. I did. Whew, I took a chance there. I mean, after six rights in a row, I didn't want to swing and miss. So then you got another dynamic here, and you don't have to answer this. But if she were in my office, you were in my office, I would be asking about her history with her mother. What was the relationship? What was it like? What is driving her because of this history? Is that a factor? You don't have to answer it. It may not be a factor, but I suspect it probably is.
It is.
I knew it, man. I'm 8 for 8. I'm hanging up right now, Marty, because I just don't want to take a chance on making a mistake.
I'm still standing on the edge of the cliff, though.
Don't.
Kim, pull me back.
All right, buddy. Here's what I would suggest for the moment, for the meantime.
Okay.
And I know 3 years is a long time. Let it go. Let it go. Just basically realize that for this amount of time, try not to take it personally. She's driven by some intense loyalty emotionally toward her mother, and she feels she has to. So right now, don't make it an issue anymore, because once mother is in a nursing home or has passed away, you don't want her coming back home resenting the fact that you kept trying to push her into a better balance.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I would suggest. And one other thing, try not to take it personally. And one other bad news, and I'm going to close with this, and I could be right. If your marriage hasn't been the greatest, then she's going to be even less likely to compromise regarding her mother.
Well, it was great. And then this with the mother and
it hasn't been because of that. Yeah, right. It hasn't been because of that. And so therefore to say, she's got to hopefully see that you force her to choose or at least continue to push on her to choose. You're only asking for
trouble. I'll lose.
Yeah. This is the least bad of your options. It ain't a good one, but it's the least bad.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
God bless you, Marty. God bless you. Hang in there. Hang strong.
Thank you.
All right. Boy, a lot of good questions up there. All right. Try to get to what I can. Mike, Cincinnati, is it correct to say there is hope in science? Hey, Mike, what's up?
Dr. Ray, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you mean by there is hope in science?
Well, I'm asking you. I don't understand the statement. It doesn't sound correct.
It depends how you define it. If you say there is hope in science in that we can come to understand how the world works and how our bodies work, yeah, that's a great thing. The church would be very much in favor of that. But if there is only hope in science, which means that materialism is all there is, and there's nothing beyond this world and the whole shebang, as C.S. Lewis calls it, well, then it's a nonsense statement.
Is that implied in that? Because
well,
you're stopping with just science and not going further?
Well, my guess would be that those who say that are not thinking beyond science. That'd be my guess. So I would ask them, what do you mean by hope in science? And if they say, well, science will solve all our problems. Really? How can science solve evil? How can science solve aggression? How can science change the human brain to the point where it isn't so self-absorbed? Good question, Mike. This is Dr. Ray.
Sixty on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The disclosure of a name in the ancient world belonged to the order of trust and intimacy. And so when God revealed his name to Moses, it was an extraordinary outreach to us, saying that we were called to an intimate, trusting relationship with him. And so we should always reverence this name as a great gift. We should obviously never use God's name to curse or to blaspheme or to berate others. God's name is meant to bring blessing. And likewise, the vain use. Vain means empty. So some of these expressions like, oh my God, or, you know, and so on, need to be avoided as well. Vain means empty, and those are using God's name as an empty kind of expression of exasperation. And then finally, never ever to use God's name to swear an oath falsely. God is the God of truth. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
Always remember, you are unique, just like everybody else. I was reading in the latest issue of Purgatory Today that if I could be instrumental in someone vocationally discerning, and that person goes on to beautifully, successfully, and very virtuously pursue their vocation, I get a percentage credit. You know, Bob from Texas, if he baptizes a little baby, I think I get 1% credit for that. Hi, Bob, how are you?
Hey, Dr. Ray, I'm just as unique as you are.
Yes, you are, sir.
So how
are you wrestling over this?
Well, so quick background, I have 5 kids, and I've been approached, they're all under the age of 10, and I've been approached not by one, but by a handful of people at my parish saying, hey, you'd be an excellent deacon, you should go to the discernment class, and we really think you'd be good at it, and even my parish priest said that. And I'm wrestling with it because, well, I'm still.
You got 5 kids and you got a marriage.
I've got 5 kids. I got a marriage. Yeah. Something about, you know, that vocational piece I got to wrestle with. Well, So I'm trying to weigh this. Hey, look, is this just, you know, a random mix of people saying this? Or is this something I should discern and actually go forward with? Does that make sense?
Let's eliminate the people saying this. Let's say that the nobody's commenting on you. You would make a great deacon. Okay, let's just wipe that out. Let's just look at it from the perspective of, is this a good move for me right now in my life?
I keep circling back to that.
Five kids and under 10.
Hey, it's always a fun time.
Probably more, maybe, correct?
Yes. I'm bald for a reason. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. And you work full-time, I assume?
Yeah, I do.
Hmm. Of course, I don't know in your diocese what the diaconate training is, but it's probably about a three-year course, one full weekend once a month or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of commitment. How old are you?
Under 40.
In my diocese, you couldn't enter the diaconate over 60.
Correct.
So I had a priest suggest me for the diaconate, and I was over 60 at the time, 62, something like that. So I didn't have to wrestle with it. But I wouldn't have done it even when I was your age, well, not your age, older, because we had 10 kids. And given everything impinging upon my life, I didn't want to add to the demands. You know, it wouldn't just be 3 years of education. Now you would be doing an awful lot of active stuff for the church. Maybe the better thing to do is to wait. You could still do it at some point, God willing.
Yeah, that's where I've been landing. But every time I've said, hey, I'm going to wait, I get another phone call or I bump into someone that says, hey.
You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. You're saying this is God signaling me.
I try to use logic as well as discernment, but yeah, anyway, that's kind of where my mind's going.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I'm not saying it's not God's signaling. Yeah, I can't know that, but to base it on the fact that people are saying, you know, you'd just be wonderful as a deacon, and you got so many qualities. You can say, well, right now in my life, my vocation is a young family and perhaps a growing young family, and I'm really pretty much up to my neck in responsibilities. So therefore, to add a major one right now, one, I might not be the best deacon because I'm trying to juggle my family life, and then I might not be the best father because I'm trying to juggle my deacon life. I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do, but I think you can seriously consider this given all that right now you are immersed in, and that is being a great daddy to a bunch of kids, providing support, and also keep in mind your wife in all this too, because these demands from the diaconate would take you away a lot in the evenings and different times. So I think maybe your plate's pretty full, and wait until some of the plate is a little emptier here, and then you can say, that's why I asked your age, you know, then you can say at age 52, I think it's about time to make a move into the diaconate here. Three of the kids are out and two of them are late teenagers and et cetera. That'd just be my thoughts on that, Bob. I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight into people telling me I'd be a wonderful deacon. Not at this point.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thank you. You know what other thing I could say about this? I didn't say this to Bob, but I could say this. When somebody tells me that I'd be good at something, if it's something involving a ministry or religion or something like that, you know what I oftentimes say? I would say, well, maybe, but you can't really say that because you don't know me enough. And all these people who are telling Bob he'd be great at this, they're basing this on the level of knowledge they have of him. They see him at church. Maybe he does some things for the church, precedes him with his young, beautiful family. And they extrapolate from that. Boy, this guy's a faith-filled guy. Wouldn't he be a great deacon? Perhaps. But again, really only his wife knows in a lot of respects. That's the other thing I didn't say. But you definitely got to talk this over with your wife because this is a two-person decision at this point. Whew. I just wiped out about 8 emails that said, you didn't tell Bob to talk to his wife. Talk to your wife. Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Paying too much for healthcare and supporting services you don't believe in? Our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare, has prices that are 60% less than the nation's average cost of healthcare. Join the nation's leading healthcare sharing ministry, built by people of faith for people of faith. Saving money through ethical and affordable healthcare. Call now to see how much you can save. 866-977-5821. That's 866-977-5821.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
In the church, we speak of 7 gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, knowledge, loyalty, courage, and reverence or fear of the Lord. When I speak about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and these gifts come, they give you the ability to go beyond your strength. If you're struggling to be a good person, a good member of your religion, you know it's a struggle and you don't always make it. I've been at it many, many decades, and I still struggle and trip and fall and have holes in my socks. Struggling to be a good person, something that we need help at. And this help comes to us by these gifts of the Holy Spirit.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
You and I are going to link some heads. All right. I got to try to get to. If I don't get to you, please call back. I'd love to hear from you in the future. Tom is calling. He had a heck of a time with his 17-year-old son. They butted heads, and then the kid said, I'm out of here. Tom said, you can be out of here. And he went to live. The kid went to live with Tom's parents, and Tom's parents really don't follow the faith as Tom does. Tom, how are you?
I am good, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
What did he do that you told him to get out?
Well, it's not just one instance, and it's something that probably I know has been building for years and years and years. It's just a complete lack of respect for myself and, more importantly, my wife. And probably, well, I know that I probably let it go on too long, and it kind of came to a head with an argument that we were having, and he showed complete disrespect, and I told him he had to leave. And this isn't the first time. There is some precedent to it where, you know, he needs to take a minute to cool down, think about what he's doing. There's one time that he left on his own, one time I told him he needed to leave, and this time he left, and he went over to my parents' house. Which you know, initially it was, okay, he's in a safe place. We know where he is. Take a day to cool it down.
I ain't coming back here because they understand me.
Exactly. And he is, right now, he's been there for, it's probably a month now, 4 or 5 weeks. And he feels that he needs time away to figure things out. And
he needs time away because he don't like your rules.
Exactly. And you know, we let it go on too long. I know that. I know that I did not do what I needed to do and tell him, you know, hey, this is
I was just getting ready to say that, Tom. I was just getting ready to say you probably had struggles with your wife because she didn't like what this boy was doing and you made excuses or you were laissez-faire or you were hands-off or whatever you were. And you look at it now and go, oh, boy, she was right.
She was.
Okay. Well,
and you're right. I did not. I was not as involved as I should have been. And you know, she would tell me that he was disrespectful, and he said this and said that, and I would say something to him, or I would pull him aside, but I never really
talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Stop that. Quit that. Your mother says you did this. I did not. If she wouldn't have done this, well, next time be careful. Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of story I hear. Okay, so when does he turn 18?
In July.
Oh, well, you want a prediction?
I think I know what your prediction is. He's been saying since he was 15 that when he turns 18 he ain't coming home. I know.
And here's the other question. Is it safe to say that your parents think that you're really kind of unfair with him too?
Absolutely.
Yep. Boy, oh boy, I'm hitting on every single psychological cylinder today. Okay, well, here's the first thing I would do. Maybe you've done it, so forgive me if I'm treading turf you already walked. I'd apologize like crazy to my wife. Honey, I am so sorry. You have been right. You were right all along. I was dumb. I was blinded. You were right. I hope you'll forgive me, and I promise you I will never allow this to happen again. Have you done that?
Not as much as I should.
Okay. And then probably you might have to accept that he's just going to live there. My guess would be that he likes it there because you said they're not really all that religious, and he likes that because he thinks you guys are kind of goofy in your religion too.
You're hitting the nail on the head there.
I'm 12 for 12 right on this program. 12 for 12.
And he has really no rules, restrictions, and
there you go.
You know, he can come and go as he pleases.
He's got a car? They give him a car?
Well, he has a car. It's his.
Whose
car.
Is it?
He bought it.
Okay. Is he paying for the insurance?
Well, he was. And so
you're not supporting him financially, are you? You're not putting any money into this, are you?
Well, no, not anymore.
Okay.
I mean, when he
decision.
Was living with us, of course we were.
Okay, but that's your decision. But the other thing tells me, too, is, you know, this kid being totally disrespectful and you still let him have a car, I don't understand that one. But that's probably part and parcel of some of the stuff that you look back on and say, I'd have done it different. So, given all that, support your wife. Recognize that if this kid is going to grow into a better relationship with you guys, he's going to have to mature a bit. One of the things that may happen, I've seen this an awful lot, Tom. Even your parents, who are quote-unquote so much more understanding and tolerant, may find out that this grandson of theirs isn't quite so easy to live with as they thought he would be. That may happen. Wouldn't surprise me.
Okay.
So, given that, however you and your wife want to keep up some contact, whether it's wish him a happy birthday or every so often text him, say, hope things are going good for you, et cetera, et cetera. Is he graduating, by the way?
He is, in fact. So we do keep in contact with him. We homeschool all the kids, and so he had to finish with my wife some testing and things along, assessments and what have you, to graduate.
Okay.
And
who's going to pay for college?
He is, if he decides to go to college. And that's another thing that, you know, he's saying that he's going to be doing things purposefully, I think, purposefully to kind of, I don't want to say stick it to us, but to say, you know, kind of a slap in the face.
He may, but good, that, here's the good news, Tom. You and your wife laid down probably a very solid base. And when this young man finds out that his choices may not all work out so well, that he's got that base to step back upon. Thank you for joining me, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. Gotta run. Walk with God. Hold your children. If you got them, type by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.